whenever I asked him, I went to
October 15th board meeting, Thomas Edison Charter.
Thank you.
All right, and give me 2 seconds here. So let me find my conference number.
Merge the call in. You doing a conference call?
I got.
I thought I'd be different for.
I'm good. I'm good.
But she's down.
That's right. You
printed. All right. Thanks, everybody. Sorry for the delay here. They can get rolling. How's everybody doing today?
Great.
Very well.
Good. Call to order. Thomas Edison Charter School monthly board meeting. We'll start with the approval of the minutes. So if y'all just take a brief look at the minutes and let us know if you have any questions. I'll give you a couple little moments. Hey, Rupa, you on?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, cool.
Hi, Rupa.
Hi, Rupa.
Hi, Rupa.
Hi, Rupa.
How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
All right, any questions on the minutes?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Move that we accept the minutes.
That's right. All right, we have a motion to accept the minutes.
Second, Emil Brown.
All right, properly moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the ayes have them. Minutes approved with no noted corrections. Public comment. Parents, any parent comments? No parent? All right, teacher? Any teacher comments? All right, general public. Any general public comments? All right. School report.
All right, everybody should have a copy of the school report already on the same time. I redistributed those reports to you. Just some quick thank yous. We want to thank, we had our annual high school night. We had probably largest participation from high schools. So we even had St. Andrews come. We usually send, they send information and not participation. But we had St. Andrews and Laura and Mr. Smith. Who's our math coach here at the school? Was a big help in trying to put that together. So who's some of the other schools we had?
Tower Hill Charter, Howard, Ferry.
Okay.
Probably had about 12, 14 schools coming.
Okay.
Catmull didn't come this year?
Catmull did not come this year.
All right, I'll get on now.
connections
yeah, my cousin, Mark Scott. It's a history chair, but he's over there at diversity and inclusion.
We have students there, so
yeah, we do.
go easy. We want to put some more there.
But
it was great opportunity for our parents. So we had some professional development going on in October. We had a statewide professional development day. We had a full day of Kagan Cooperative learning training the day before. We had a KU coach come in, spend time in classrooms doing some modeling. So it's cooperative learning and also teaching the teachers about routines, structures in the classroom, and also students as well. So I think our teachers will, because that was one of the sessions in your classroom,
it was,
too?
Yeah,
and I think that they would comment that it's probably going well and beneficial.
The kids love it. We love it. So.
The kids?
Yeah. So we also had we had a charter day where we had about 4, 5, 6 charter schools come together to hear a full day presentation from Rick Warmly on standards-based grading, differentiated instruction, and staff, and they really enjoy that as well. Just as an update, I know the board is, one of the board's missions is to try to have at least one participant in school activities. So family reading night will be Thursday, October 25th. That's an annual event. And then we do math night the following month in November. On November
15th is math night.
Yeah, Mr. Smith helps coordinate that. That's a lot of fun as well, so you'll put that on your calendars if you can try to make that.
I'm sorry, you said November?
What? 15.
November the 15th, what
same
time?
Same time, 5:30, 7. Mm-hmm. And that's the one way of running around the building and trying it. It's just a little wild, but they love it. They love it. So all positions filled, teacher certified. We have building operations. Those pipes in the second floor bathroom have been replaced. I don't know if Jesse was able to show you any photos. I had him take photos. Yeah. One of those pipes looked like it was about 100 years old.
Yes.
The barrel line. Yes. It looked like the original pipe in that bathroom.
It was something else.
Yeah. So that has been replaced. The AC units that need to be repaired and those classrooms have been repaired. And the gym partition. To separate the two gyms. That motor, we've had some problems with that motor. So we had an electrician come in. Apparently it's not being made anymore, but they can get some parts to at least help keep it operating. So they're working on getting that fixed because we use that when we want to close the gym off and use two different activities. You know,
another motor's not an option? Or
I think for that partition, they either don't make the motor that will work with that, or I think it's just the price would just be astronomical. It's just cheaper to try to get it fixed. But I'll double check on that because I think we actually looked initially at purchasing a new motor, and we're told that wouldn't be a good move.
All right.
So should we look at getting a totally new setup in there?
That was because those doors are pretty old. They might be 100 years old as well. those doors are pretty bad too. So that could be something. It's just that could be kind of pricey. And at some point, I mean, not right now, but maybe we go out and start looking for some donors that we really need. We talked about before. Is we look at the potential for getting a wood floor or some other type of floor because the students keep getting hurt because that floor is tile over concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And
Why don't you look into both of those options?
Okay.
As far as the flooring and the just a totally new setup.
All right.
I mean, because just to, even though it's a newer motor.
Right. It's still passive.
It's going to still be just a matter of time until you're going to have to do that anyway.
Right.
So, okay. We might as well be proactive rather than reactive.
We'll definitely do that. I appreciate that. And so you'll see our enrollment is at 731 students, so short of the goal, which was, what, 740?
740.
Yes.
But we have been working through some of them. I think we got a large, big grant money. Everything is going to help to offset that. And but we also have some positions that we think we'll be able to work around and not really financially see any real suffering from not reaching that goal. And then there's always some categories where we have extra funding in.
Yeah.
So Ms. Wang and I will kind of work with that, with the finance committee, and get that taken care of.
Yeah, because it's not the end of the world. I mean, so it's 9 students, that equates to about 90 grand.
Right.
So we should just when we did the budget, but that's why we tried to squeeze it as tight as a rock. We should be able to work around that. I know you guys have some staff in that you might not need to refill.
Right.
And we did receive more
Sick
leave in local funds than we had budgeted, so that might just make the gap.
So now, will there be changes to the budget to reflect any kind of a shortfall?
In the forecast, it will reflect.
Okay.
But I don't think there'll be any significant impact to the instructional program because of the flexibility we had in the budget. So I think it will just require us to, we won't spend as much as we sort of plan to spend, so we'll reduce what we plan to spend, which we really didn't think we would spend anyway. So, and then we have, it looks like a couple positions throughout the year we may be able to use as a benefit for reducing the impact as well.
Okay.
All right. So, what we'll keep our eye on, we're not in the finance. No.
Motion to approve the head of school report. Emil Brown.
All right, it's been approved in a second. Any questions? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the ayes have it. Finance Committee.
Okay.
Jerry, how's it going to be able to make
that? Mix up in my own calendar. Sorry, guys.
We started receiving our first distribution of local funding. If you look on page 2 at the bottom, this was done prior to September 30th. It was done exactly at September 4th. So at that time, we had 717 students. So this is based off of that. And then they do a true up later in the year to what it actually is. Now they are anticipating that we will get almost $3 million, 2.954, and as you can see that we budgeted 2,899. So once we get the additional students, that is going to be an increase to what we had originally anticipated.
So Ms. Wanda, remind me for the actuals for the unit formula. So we've received 3.3 million so far. Right?
Yes, so far we've received that.
So when? What's that based on?
Based on the May.
Okay. And we got that in July.
Right.
And then there'll be a true up based on our September 30th number.
Right. Usually January.
Got it.
Also, I just wanted to state that we have received from all of the school districts the first 35% except for Christina School District.
surprise.
Who's going to drive down there and collect that? For the recording, that's just a joke.
So far, things are looking good. Hopefully, before the month is over, we will receive that from Christina. There's no major changes on anything else. Everything is looking pretty good.
Can you help me with something?
Sure.
For the district funding, so what is budgeted, I guess, for the full year?
It the local?
Yes.
It's
what is going on there?
It's on page one. It's 2,899,555.
And the actual thus far is the half a million roughly. So are we saying that we're going to get 2.3 from the districts?
We should get an excess of 2.954.
Okay. Is that still reasonable?
That's based on the actual bill.
Okay. 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 And did we get our settlement monies yet?
Not yet.
So they're late with the settlement monies and they're late with the actual payment?
Yeah. They're late.
Collection agency.
Christine. Right. So I think the thing to keep our eye on here as we go forward in the future months, all the way on the far right on her lead sheet, the first sheet, the second to last column on the kind of the spreadsheet, she has net excess or deficit based on what's forecasted for the rest of the year, right? And so that's what we keep our eye on. As long as that's on this side of the ledger, I'm fine. Yeah. Goes on the other side of the ledger, you know, we'll start to talk about that. Any additional questions from Ms. Wanda?
Motion to accept.
All right. Motion to accept the September finance report.
Second.
All right. It's been properly moved and seconded. Any questions? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Any opposition? All right. The ayes have it. All right. We have some special guest speakers here. So I've asked them to. So Mr. Cooper, Ms. Winder, and I have met with Wishman Gardana. Did I say that right? The new name. I'm so used to how you say that.
Wishman Gardana.
Well, yeah, Wishman Gardana.
Or WGA.
WGA. Let's go with that. So I asked them to come in just so you could hear directly from them and. Not just me or Mr. Cooper, to just give a brief summary of our financials, which they'll do. You can give us an overview.
And, a quick overview?
Quick overview, and if there's any questions, we can take it.
thank you for having us here tonight. Sherry Garris is the manager who performed the audit, and I'm the director in charge of the audit of Thomas Edison. I used to actually do what Sherry did. That's all I used to do from beginning to end too, many years ago. I'm happy to report, the audit is for the fiscal year ended 6/30/18. And if you had a chance to look at it, we're only presenting 1 year. Generally, we present two years so that you can get a feel for it. But the unfortunate thing is, because this year we had to implement a new standard that was issued by the Governmental Accounting Standards Board. We didn't have comparative information, so we're only presenting for fiscal year 6/30/18. Next year, we'll go back to a comparative model. Anytime you do a governmental financial audit, there's multiple levels of reporting, so whenever you hear us say we issued unmodified opinions, it's technically opinions, plural. Because we have what's called a government-wide, the fund financial statements, which you use to budget and run the school. Then you have required supplementary information that are mandatory. Then you have supplementary information. And then you have, because you receive federal funding greater than $750,000, then you have another opinion on the federal program. So you have roughly about five or six opinions within the document. Enough of that technical stuff. We're happy to report that we issued unmodified opinions at all levels of the audit. I don't know if you want me to go in a lot of detail or just give you results of the audit.
One quick one. Could you let people know what an unmodified
opinion is? We found no modifications. It sounds like an oxymoron, but it isn't. Basically, if we modify the report, that means there was a problem. If it's unmodified, there's no modification to the report. So whatever is presented within the document, we have to use the concept of materiality, because we don't look at every dollar, so that when we issue an opinion, it's based on materiality. And it's different for every client depending on the total assets and liabilities. But you can rest assured that we do go in greater detail, and Sherry can attest to that. As I said before, we implemented the new statement. If you look at your government-wide statement, it looks like you're in a deficit situation of approximately $16 million. But don't be alarmed, because the reason for that is because we're required, if we do government audits, we're required to include your actuarial calculation of what your future potential net pension liability is, and your benefits other than pension, which would be health insurance and so forth. But the problem is, the reason why it's so high is because the health benefits are pay as you go. In other words, the state or the pension office does not send you a bill like they do for the pension. They actually calculate what your liability is. They only have you pay the current liability and not project going forward. So that's why it looks kind of out of the ordinary.
Yeah, so it's one particular statement that is nonsense that we have to do this, but it's not nonsense because of WGA.
Yeah.
It's nonsense because, you know, the state of Delaware
has for
charter schools, but for each individual government entity, they had to show a statement of its future liability for all retirement and, you know, pensions and everything. If every employee was to do it, this would be the liability today, even though the school wouldn't be responsible for all that liability.
As Mikhail said, it looks silly for the charter school, because ultimately, and again, I don't wish this, if the charter school were to close its doors, the only thing that you would be liable for is whatever assets you have. So the state actually ends up being the one that honors the commitment. However, if you were to implement the same thing to a local government like the city of Wilmington, the state's not going to bail them out. So basically, the theory behind these statements is to show the public what the city has committed to. They have this future commitment that they need to honor. It's a contractual agreement. But again, in a charter school, it doesn't really, so I wouldn't be alarmed about that. So if we go to the traditional statements, which are the fund statements, The charter school had total...
And everybody will get a bounded copy of the audit. So we have those, and so everybody will have this. Yeah, and it's a bounded copy. We'll put them in the board manual is what we plan to do.
Under the traditional statements, the charter school, Thomas Edison, closed out fiscal year end of June 30, 2018 with a surplus of almost $2.2 million. And most of it was in cash. That in what the it's on page 5 of the report. What that shows is your total assets minus your liability, and that's the net thereof. So you are in a good financial footing. So basically, you have approximately $2 million to balance future budget. So your concern was the shortfall of the $90,000. You do have a cushion in case you really needed to balance the fiscal year 19. So that's basically what that is. Then for the profit and loss, or the statement of revenue and expenses, when you take into account the Christina School District settlement, the school had a deficit of $297,983. However, if you look at the what was budgeted, it was budgeted at $300,000 was supposed to come from the foundation, and the money wasn't needed, so it wasn't transferred. So if you look at the budget as it was originally adopted and your operations, when you net the 300 against the 297,983, you actually had a surplus. You would have had a surplus of $2,000. So you did better by $2,000 than you projected.
Wow.
So it was a balanced year.
That's skimming.
And then just quickly, pages 10 to 14, when you get a chance to look at the document, you can call. If you have any questions, you can call Sherry or myself. We'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Pages 10 to 14 is the policies behind what I just talked about. Page 14, at the bottom, it shows whether your deposits in a financial institution or with the state are at risk. The only area that it's a risk is the foundation. You bank mostly with one bank, and the deposits are in excess of $250,000. So if the bank were to collapse, should we have what we had in 2008? There's always a possibility, but I don't see the likelihood of it. That's where the risk is. That's basically the only item of concern, if you may want to consider as a concern, that we have during the whole audit process. Your staff is doing a tremendous job. We've seen an incredible increase in the quality and the performance of your office staff. They're doing a tremendous job. Then on page 15 to 16, gives you detail of your accounts receivable, who owes you money and from where, capital assets, and debt obligations. And the only debt obligation you have is basically accrued vacation. The other obligation is through the foundation, which will be paid off within the next 3 years. Pages 16 and 19 is the disclosure on the actuarial calculation of your pension liability. 19 to 22 are your benefits other than pension. I will explain, if anybody wants me to, what all that stuff means. I think it's overkill, but we have no choice. Then page 23 shows your lease commitments. 23 to 24 shows new pronouncements that have been implemented during the year, such as we call it, OPEB 75. And new pronouncements that are coming down the pike. And basically what's coming down the pike is leases. There's a whole bunch of other ones, but we don't see any impact. The only one that may have an impact is the implementation of how you treat leases on your financial statement. I don't know why they changed it, but they felt like they needed to make it more complex than it is. And then on page 25 looks at your budget versus your actual, and that's what I referred to. And then pages 26 to 29 is additional information for your pension and other benefits. And then pages 30, 31 are your fund statements, which provides more detail. The reason why we include that is in case you need to go out to issue a bond or debt, you have the information readily available. And then pages 32 to 33 is your governmental, generally accepted government auditing standard report, and there are no findings. That's what you want to hear. Mm-hmm. Pages 34 and 35, that's your report in regards to your compliance with your federal funds. And again, we issued a clean opinion or unmodified opinion, and there are no findings. Pages 36 is your schedule of federal assistance, and it shows you by most of it is through the Department of Education, and your food program is through the Department of Agriculture, and it shows the total dollar amounts, if you're interested. And then it also, and on page 37 and 38, gives you the results of our compliance audit in accordance with federal guidelines. And we're happy to report you're considered a low risk because you've done good all these years and you had no significant findings or what we term as question costs. What a question cost is, when we look at your federal expenditures and you didn't spend the money in accordance to federal guidelines, then we question it, and then you have to hash it out with the oversight agency. Usually it's the Delaware Department of Education. They are what we term as the cognizant agency. And that's basically it. We did not issue a management letter. We didn't feel the need to. Overall, it's a great report, and it's a testament, not just to the staff or the office, but also the board that keeps an eye on everything. So I don't have anything else to say, and I don't want to bore anybody else. So if anybody has any questions.
Just a quick one. In relations to other charters, do you do any other audits?
We do one more charter school. But to give you a history of our experience, when we were Hagerty and Hagerty, and then we merged with Wisman Giordano, we were the first auditing firm to do charter schools.
Okay.
We actually did all seven of them back in the 90s. And then eventually I suggested to the auditor's office that they introduce competition, and they did. So I didn't end up just so they took two away from us, and we did five for probably about 15, 20 years. And we've been doing probably an average of, we reached about last year we did four, but the contract ran out. So now we do two. But the format that you see in that document, I'm the one that originated it. So
through Hagerty and Hagerty.
When we were Hagerty and Hagerty.
Gotcha.
Back in the mid-90s.
Okay.
And the biggest thing is they've tested less and less as we've moved on. And that initially was treasurer. You know, they would test a whole lot. And over the years, I felt less and less need to test. We've become a lot more disciplined. We're good with our receipts. We make sure that we have evidence of what we spent.
And I want to reinforce again, I've been called a nitpicker. So if you get a report like this from me, it's...
Consider us. Gotcha. Thanks, Sherry.
You're welcome.
Yeah, not bad. Appreciate it. We thought it would be, even though there was no major report, we thought it would be good to hear directly from the auditor as opposed to us just coming in here and say, hey, we're good. You know, so, if you have any other questions?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, one question over, say, past 15 years, our audit report, would that be sort of the norm for most charges, would be above the norm?
Above the norm.
All right.
Yeah, we've had some issues with others. I can't mention names.
Yeah, I know.
Yep.
And that's the reason why I asked that question.
I wanted to know. I wanted to close it for you.
Well, he kept saying, we're good, we're modified. And
right. Like I said, the only thing we found is the concentration of
low risk
deposits.
Yeah.
So the only thing, the two alternatives, there's two ways you can do it. Actually, when you're a government, you have a little bit of leverage. Delaware is probably one of the few states that it isn't mandated by law to collateralize deposits of a government. If you're in Jersey or Pennsylvania, and I've done school districts in Pennsylvania, not Jersey, but I know some other rules. They're required by law to collateralize. So if you exceed the FDIC, they have to put securities on the side to secure you so that if the bank fails, you have securities on the side to cover.
Wow.
Delaware doesn't have such a rule. So what we recommend the government say, hey, bank, if you want us to keep the money with you, you need to collateralize our deposits and we'll keep all the money with you. And then every month they will confirm the collateralization they set aside. That's option one. Option two, you can spread it across multiple financial institutions. Or option three, in the case of the foundation, you may be able to, you can talk to the bank and say, we want to create a trust account within your trust department. If the bank fails, the trust assets are not assets of the bank and they're protected. The only risk you have in that scenario is if how you invest the money. So if you invest in international securities, that's where your risk is. But if you buy CDs or FDIC insured, the bank collapses, you're still protected. So those are the three options that you have.
Those are the three options that we should consider.
Yeah. Thank you very much for
thank you.
Having Wisman Giordano perform the audit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Motion to accept the report.
Second.
All right. Motion to accept the audit has been moved and accepted. Any questions? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? All right, the ayes have it. We appreciate you coming and hanging out with us. You're under no obligation to hang for the rest of the
meeting. I don't know about sharing, right. But I can't share.
But I've already promised not to keep them long, so that'll benefit you guys.
Being passed around now is the in the two basket going to start with that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And that is the foundation. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, our beginning balance is $600,242.92. We have interest, as you see there, $49.34, giving us an ending balance for the month of $600,292.28. So, the suggestion that you were making, we've been talking about trying to do something with this, we haven't done anything yet.
Yeah.
It's sitting here. Any questions on the statement this, in terms of listing the total amount from the bank? Okay. You should also have a statement of accounts, which is the expenditures for the foundation. You start at the bottom, because you can see those, it starts with the first over. In terms of January, you'll see 9, the last 6 items. The first one dealing with the state of Delaware direct deposit of $49,410.18. In terms of the deposit, you see the charge for M&T Bank service charge of $45. You see the DCI, which is our...
Say the same thing.
Say that again.
Is she down at the bottom?
Service. Did you say service charge?
Who was that for?
Right, yeah.
I have no idea.
It was for the audit. They have to confirm the balance.
They didn't want to confirm the balance for free.
Really?
Wow. you wouldn't accept the statement
from us? Got too much money.
Wow.
Look how much it cost us.
Keeping too much money here that you shouldn't have here.
45
bucks. Wow. And they charge us to do it. It's
good example.
They made money at both ends.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you accept paper statements going forward?
Not open.
Sorry.
I mean, I'm looking at the interest, $49.34. They took
the mortgage.
It's all gone.
$24,410.18. And as was mentioned earlier by the auditors, that I think this one was 3 more years that we have to pay in terms of the mortgage. So that would free up that monthly amount. We're talking about a serious amount.
$50,000 a month almost.
And the last two are ones for Amanda Morris May. That's for the keeping of the minutes, preparing the minutes. And the last one in terms of Jerry Velasquez. This was, I think, the deposit for the Dana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any questions about the foundation report that you want? If not, need to make a
move the acceptance of the foundation report.
Second, Neil Brown.
All right. Financial report, board financials have been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? All right. The ayes have it. Achievement committee? If you had anything.
Really don't have anything to pass out. Everyone should have received from Principal L the summary of the Ames Web, which was I didn't get a chance to respond. for you, but it was a, I like that. It gave us a good overview of what's going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody, if you had a chance to look at it. One of the things that I was concerned about when we presented, when we were looking at the achievement back in at the September meeting, in terms of the math, had achieved 17% at the end of last year, and the Ames Web showed in terms of just now this is the first of four reports that roughly about 40% of the kids, if you take an average from third grade to the eighth grade, were on point. Now, obviously, that's low when you compare it to 100%. That means 60% of the kids were not. But in terms of looking at the goals that we're shooting for this year and looking at a five-year plan, that would put us right on target. So I don't know. So that's the good point. That I noticed on there, and I think it will. And one of the things, again, that was noticed looking backwards was that it was going up and down for the past 2 years. We have a good year, and then we go down. And so the whole idea of this progress report was to be able to monitor it and to go forward.
And that's what's built into that as well. So yeah. It's a benchmark assessment, so it shows you where the students are now. And then there'll be supplemental assessments that will take place. Another one in the winter and another in the spring. But what's great about this data as well, which makes it much more effective than standardized data, which is one time a year at the end of the year, is that you mentioned monitoring. There's progress monitoring built into Ames Web, where when you have students who fall within a certain category, you go back and do a mini assessment even before they do the benchmark assessment to see if where you were teaching has been effective. So because data should inform instruction. So if the data is not coming until May or June, then that student's already moving on to the next grade. Where if you're getting data on the student in October, November, and you're going to assess the student again in January, but if you see some students who you see after 2 or 3 weeks aren't making progress, you go back in and begin. That's where we have our RTI groups, and that's where we have our interventionists, and that's one of the goals was our math coach. So what we're going to do in November is we're actually going to present to the board a strategic plan for how we're addressing those benchmark assessments and how we're planning to help move the needle throughout the school year. So we'll do that at the next.
Does anyone have any questions about that or suggest, as he said, a detailed report the next time?
Yep.
And so that anything that the questions that we have right now that may not be answered now, but that could be addressed when the report comes out in November.
I know we have some kindergarten, because kindergarten went into October. So we don't have that, and I think some first grade for math, we're still waiting on, so by the next meeting, we'll have the full data for K-8, so it'll be comprehensive.
I wasn't expecting kindergarten through first and second grade on that. I've seen you guys try to test some kindergarten.
So we usually bring in we bring in a little SWAT team, they call it, and help out with that. But it's important to get that information as early as possible.
Yes. So, Principal, it pinpoints each student's strengths and weaknesses.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So are these tests in line with what the state is going to be testing in March?
This actually comes from the state.
So
this comes from the state. It's state approved and being used and recommended by the state. It actually, we came into, we were introducing this assessment system through our initial, we wrote a grant with the Delaware Early Literacy Initiative a few years ago. And we were on one of two charters approved. It was us and Coomber. And we started working with early interventions for special education students, for lower functioning students, and for any ELL, you know, English as a second language, English language learners. And they presented this Ames Web as a progress monitoring benchmark tool. And we liked it and said, wow, this may be something that we could use, you know, school, you know, school-wide, because the deli was just catered to it. So we're, you know, we're using it school-wide. And I think with the new math program we had in our junior academy, which UD was here today, that's a program state approved from the University of Delaware, where the trainer who was here from UD commented that they see this working well here, and as comparison to, in other places, they see they're seeing some successes with the new math program, and we think that with the benchmark testing and monitoring and progress monitoring, that'll be a good combination to be able to use that. And I'm going to be sending out some research on showing you how the benchmark data is just so much more powerful for our children than standardized assessments, and that we'll begin to move to understanding why it's because they don't make standardized children. So when they standardize these tests, you actually have to look at who are they using these tests to standardize.
Yes.
And you see sometimes it actually penalizes diversity, penalizes creativity. But we also know that, you know, we have some students who are planning to get into some very good high schools and very good colleges. So we've got to make sure that those students are ready, high school ready and college ready. So what we're also using through our new instructional program is grade level instruction, where in the past we were instructing students at their instructional level and not grade level instruction. But the state tests and even these benchmark assessments, these students are being assessed at grade level. So we've gone through Bookworms, our new reading program. Students are they're reading books at their level, but also at grade level to prepare them for the assessment, but also to prepare them for next level instruction and being able to move to the next grade, you know, at grade level. So it's the work we've done. We'll be strategizing, working with the achievement committee, but I think we can begin to put together a short-term and long-term strategic plan to address, you know, some of those shortfalls.
One of the thoughts, and this is a comment I'll make, is in looking at the reports, especially ahead of the reading for kindergarten, just a large percentage of kids who were well below, I think of the three circles or three pie slices. And I know we had kind of talked before, but wondering if there's something that we could consider, and I'm not looking for an answer right now, something that we could do, say identify. We know which children, we know a good percentage of our 100 students that are going to show up in kindergarten because it's Bebe's little brother, little sister. So we know, you know, so we could, my thought was some way just identifying them early, doing something either one day a week or say on the weekend, getting some grant for that and trying to tie into that. I know there's some programs out there that try to do that.
You mean before they enroll?
Well, we could look at, since like we know who they are, we could identify them early and tell them if you sign a mail, you can be pre-enrolled, you know, just, you know, like everybody else does the pre-enrollment but you've got to attend this Saturday workshop once a month or twice a month or however we, that's just a suggestion, but it's the gap. We know that the majority of our kids are behind when they come in there for various reasons. They've been sitting with grandma, we've got a large percentage of them that don't even watch Sesame Street. And so they're behind just in real basic. You can comment on that. If there's any kind of way, and it may be something you guys might want to think about, not necessarily doing, but think about what is it that could be done to so that when you come in, it's a little higher than what it is. I know when I was doing it, we would give them just a short test. It was basically, can you write your name? That was one thing. Can you count, see how far up you can count to 100 and and small things like that, what alphabets, pointing out the alphabets. And we had some that couldn't recognize, or some of them didn't. They thought their name was Booby.
Right.
Yeah,
so a preschool program would be your answer, right? I mean, that's
well, they do that now, but obviously the ones that we get. So
well, I'm saying our own preschool.
Oh, yeah. Then that would
because
be.
Then we can oversee
we gotta,
it.
Yeah.
You don't have the space, right? So that's your answer for that. The one thing we have to be careful of is that when you begin to start sort of assessing students before they come into your program or creating programs, you can be viewed as sort of trying to filter or try to qualify like who gets in, and that's sort of a knock on charters. And we've always been the kind of charter where we take all students, and if you stay with us until eighth grade, we'll present that you will, your parents will have the opportunity for you to select, you can attend any school you want. For some students, you see right away they'll become successful. Some, it takes a while, but those students over time are with us. We see that they'll make those gains. So I think that we just have to strengthen our kindergarten program. And it's a lot on our kindergarten teachers. And that's why we have that support, the extra support there. And we appreciate that from the board. But I think that with bookworms, I think it'd be great and continue to just support reading, lots of reading, lots of writing, and lots of speaking for at a very early age. And then maybe partner with some preschool programs and maybe begin to develop with them what we need in terms of, not only the students that come here, but wherever they may go. Because when we all do better, we all do better.
Yes.
So that's right. And that's the key. But I think
and
it's
that's
a great,
what, yeah.
great start.
Any questions that you've run out of time?
Yeah. All right.
Flag on.
So you heard the Achievement Committee report. Any questions on that? All right. Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second, Emil Brown.
All right. It's been properly moved to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, any opposed? All right, guys. Mr. Pinker, I know you've got a role. You let them know. All right. I don't have anything for personnel. Operations committee.
We didn't have anything other than...
Yep.
Yeah, I did send you an email on it. But just the one thing I did want to follow up on, the proposal that we got for the fire alarm system, we're still waiting for a fire marshal report. We haven't gotten that, so don't know what the status of that is.
So tell me again.
There was a proposal that we received for like $15,000 thereabouts, but it was predicated upon...
Fire marshal report.
Yeah, so haven't seen that. So that's the only reason why we haven't moved forward on that.
So is there anything you need from Jesse on that?
Yeah, he was working on getting a copy of the fire marshal report. Just that he hasn't gotten it yet. Okay. So that's the update that I just wanted to give on that.
All right.
And did you the transportation yet?
No. You know, the issues we got.
Before the transition, that might take a little longer. I want to go over this, the electric real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ms. Winder was good enough to give me a copy of the electric bills. And if you, I don't have a copy of it, but basically it shows what our rate is with Liberty Holding Electric. So Navigate Power basically goes out with the deregulation and says, okay, you guys use 800,000 watts per year. What rates can I get for you? So they came back with four different Champion Energy, Constellation, Gary, I guess it is Energy, and Source Power. And the best rate they came was 0.07684. So based on what we use on a monthly or annual basis, we would save $6,000 in the first year. If we signed a 2-year agreement, it would be $15,000 over 2 years, and a 3-year would be $23,000 savings. And I'd be fixed cost, and we don't have to worry about that rate going up. And that would be beginning November 1st. Ms. Weiner also informed us that the 2-year agreement with, I guess, Liberty Holding has expired. Is that correct, Pat? So we are a free agent this time. So I talked to Mr. Bloxham and Jerry. The operations committee, you know, recommended a 2-year to save $15,000.
Is there any upfront costs for that?
No.
No.
All you're doing is signing and saying, okay. And the only thing different that's going to come is on the DelMarva bill, instead of it saying Liberty Holding Electric, it'll say
Source
Power and Gas, and it'll be a fixed rate.
You want to move on that recommendation?
I'm making a recommendation on behalf of the operations committee.
All right.
Second the motion, Hal Blops.
Any questions?
Questions.
So any questions on what Mr. Brown shared?
Reference checks on other clients that these companies have, just to find out what are some potential issues. Since I don't know if we have issues with the current company, it's a significant savings, but is it worth it if we're gonna be sitting here with 700 kids and we have a power issue? So I just wanted to know, because I didn't know anything about it. So I just want to know. My only question would be, did we check with other schools in particular or large organizations who use this power to make sure that there haven't been any issues in the past? Because if it is, I think that should be considered if we want to make that move. If we have and there haven't been any issues, I'm cool with it.
But it's not a different power.
Yeah.
You're still getting DelMarva, but coming from DelMarva Park. It's where it's being sourced from in the contract fees. Mm-hmm. So DelMarva is still...
So as far as the equipment and the power that actually comes in, nothing changes there.
We just have a fixed rate. This company says, okay, if you guys are going to be $800,000, we will give you that at this rate, fixed rate for 2 years. So they have a source for whatever electricity they put out. Whether they put it out on the grid through solar panels or wind energy, but they have this out there for us.
That's a big question. They did this in homes as well, because I remember a couple of years back getting something about somewhere somebody figure out a way to circumvent it so that the system runs through them or they pay for something or they do something and they get paid.
Right. So just to make it even clearer, your bill would not change, okay? It's still going to say DelMarva Power at the top. It's just this little box. It's going to change as to who it is that is the middle guy, so to speak, in terms of getting the money. So the bill will come still from DelMarva Power, just like here, except this box is going to change.
So, and operating through DelMarva, you get to decide who DelMarva sources your electricity.
Correct.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
But, I mean, it's a good question.
I thought it was somebody different than DelMarva.
No. So.
All right. So what's the pleasure? I think we were going to move, because our contract ends.
It's already
over, right? So
we can make it happen November 1st.
Got it.
And I'll just send you over the paperwork. Mm-hmm.
Motion is still on.
Yeah, so I think
I made a motion.
Did I get that seconded?
I seconded.
Okay, cool. So the motion, it was a minute, I can't remember. So the motion has been moved and seconded. Any additional questions? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? All right, the ayes have it. Still under operations. Thought it would be, we don't have to to tackle all the issues now. I just wanted to the school came to us with kind of the issues they've been having with transportation. And we kind of had some dialogue about how we were going to respond as a board to the bus company. So I just wanted to discuss that. Now, for the relationship, you know, they'll still go to the school. But I feel like, you know, it's been a rough month. And we as a board should probably be reaching out and saying, you know, we find some of this unacceptable. We ask that you work with our school to kind of resolve these issues. And Rupa has been nice enough to say that she will review any letter we did prior to sending it out. So Principal L sent us some good stats, I think, of a perfectly kind of good kind of rundown of what the situation is. I guess my question to the board is how do we want to proceed?
This one right here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. We've been emailing Mr. Williams. Advance every day prior to, since we've had that conversation every day about late buses, morning and afternoon. He actually emailed me back, said thanks. And it seems some days it seems like things are getting better.
Getting a little better.
And then, like today, we had two buses. One came at 8:50, one came at like 9:10 today. So
right.
It seems like it's right. So it seems like it's getting better. And then we have them. And in the afternoon, they're having a problem getting, they're losing drivers.
How about bus number 14? Has that improved at all?
Actually, yeah. It seemed like once I emailed you guys, right, bus 14 had a driver.
So that's one.
The problem is that we have other buses that don't have drivers. Like we had two buses today that came after one came. Both came around 4:30, so, and then one bus had no driver. So we had almost every day we're combining two buses in the on the one bus.
So the fact that the bus company lost that school, first responder school, has not resulted in us being the recipient of better service.
Which we thought, but right. So you know, we approached them immediately with that, like that'll be great. The issue was that route was one that was run before our run. So if that had been run simultaneously, then it would free up drivers to drive our students at 4:00. But they were a school that dismissed before we did. So our drivers who drive us actually drove their routes. So actually what it did was it eliminated routes for those drivers. And I think that's why they're seeing drivers now, because one has quit like last week because they're not getting enough work. Because they're already not full-time employees. So they're not getting enough work. So now they're moving on to take other jobs.
So I guess our biggest challenge is this, is what are we going to do in terms of, I don't know if meeting with them is going to improve, but looking down the road. Because this is the year that their contract runs out. If I'm not mistaken, this is part.
We're actually, the contract ran out last year.
And got
we had the two-year
option.
Right. Option.
So,
and then next year we have another option. Right. We can or cannot.
So our window for switching is June 2019, right? And I guess that's the problem is, you know, what do we do going forward?
Yeah.
Because either we got to somehow get ready to switch over to another vendor,
right?
Or they clean up their act.
Yeah.
And I get the sense that they're not going to clean up their act because the performance indicates that it's not happening.
Yeah.
So
and
that
I
being
think they're trying. So you know, on the record, I want to say that I like the dispatchers. We call. I mean, you can tell they're really trying, but they can't. It's tough running a bus company in Delaware because the supplement that comes from DOE in Delaware, it's much lower than in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. So many bus companies won't come in to Delaware, and it makes it difficult because you're not paying the drivers enough to hire them full-time, and then they're going on to work for school districts and drive, you know, full-time.
But the fact remains that we're paying more than the state, because that's when we negotiated the contract last year with them. That's how they had us over a barrel. Mm-hmm. And we had to concede to them that, okay, we'll pay you above market rate. So,
right.
You know, we're not paying them the least amount of money. If nothing, we're paying them a premium. I just don't know what we can do. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line is what do we do?
We're definitely paying too much.
Right.
That bus come 9 and 9, 10.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they know they have students walking into the classroom. well, after the lesson has started, or to have kids getting home close to 6 p.m. who aren't in the after-school program.
Yeah.
So if their census is going to not improve, then can we increase our penalty to them? Because right now it's only 10%.
That might be a question for Rupa.
But that would be like a negotiating of the contract, yeah, which they might say also. But,
yeah,
you know.
We would have to, they would have to agree to it.
Right, but I mean, as a function of good faith, if they really were interested in holding us, you know, in keeping us, and they are trying to improve, then they should have no problem offering to improve on that rate.
Because I don't think a $20 penalty.
No, it's motivation.
$29.
It's not
motivation.
No, it doesn't do anything.
You got to look at building something in there where there's a penalty for buses that don't come at all. Because that's basically, we pay for a bus we never use.
Right.
You know,
and that's $229.
That you basically use one $229 bus to transport $450 worth of students, basically, that we paid for.
So, but they're invoicing, their contract to us is based on buses per day. Mm-hmm. So if they're short a bus one day, then we should deduct that whole day, you know, in terms of not paying the $229, you know.
That's what we should point out.
Right.
Did we specifically lose any students because of the buses?
Well, I don't want to say specifically,
but... can't prove it, but...
We can't prove
it. I mean, if a parent signs an affidavit saying, I took my student out because the buses weren't running.
Right. Well, I mean, 2 years ago, we had... I mean, some of you at the graduation, it was the last graduation we had at Howard. We had a young lady who came to attend the graduation because that was a class she had been with since kindergarten. But the mom pulled her out after sixth grade because she couldn't deal with the kid sitting on a bus in Newark for an hour every day. So she enrolled and she said, it broke my heart because my older son graduated from here and my daughter wanted to graduate, but I'm going to lose my job. Mm-hmm. And so, but she said, what I'm asking is, can my child still attend the graduation even though she didn't attend it? And we allowed her to attend because it wasn't her fault that the bus company, you know, there are parents who call all the time and just say, listen, I loved it. I wanted to be there, but I just couldn't deal with the waiting on the stop. So I'm sure it impacts parents who don't return, and it impacts future enrollment, you know, as well, because parents are saying to other parents, oh, don't go there because their buses won't ever pick you up. And it's not just us. I mean, I talked to the assistant superintendent from Votech and Apple and other places, and everybody's having, you know, same issues with this company. So there's an issue. So I know that the board is looking at alternatives, and I think that's vision. We have to have that to stay ahead of the game, to look at what are we going to be proactive or be reactive. So I think, you know, it's time to begin to look at what are some options that we have for that. Because it doesn't seem like it's going to improve.
Yeah, so I don't know what other game there is in town.
Obviously, the one on... What's the name of it?
Yeah, I forget the name, but Mosley's started. I can't think of what the name of that is.
The name of it? Mosley's thing.
Yeah, but so Mosley, who worked for them, has kind of branched off, and we thought maybe it might be something to investigate.
Maybe we could try to put a meeting together, or maybe a conference call,
yep,
to kind of talk about, like, you know, addressing the transportation, how we might want to.
I was thinking about the Latino school. Mm-hmm. It has a fleet of buses, and the thought came to me they may very well have some opportunities to assist us in picking up kids. I mean, they're drivers. I remember when we went to that meeting that they had downtown. And they talked about the consistency of their drivers and having their own buses, how it had made this miraculous change in the number of kids that were staying with the school program.
Because they had become so frustrated with the bus coming.
Yeah.
So we can just go buy our own buses.
Yeah.
But they have like five buses.
Right. That's the problem.
Yeah, but I was thinking about.
But that might
when
be.
When I was here's what I'm saying, and I'll make this real quick. What I was thinking about was, when we look at the schedules and see where the problems are. It's only about three buses that meet that consistent consistency that you're talking about. Almost every day or every week, there's three or four. They meet the inconsistency of getting the kids in there, because you have to have three consecutive days.
That are inconsistent.
And what I was thinking was, they come here to the city to bring their kids, and then the drivers basically, because I talked to that guy about that, and the drivers just jump in their cars and go home. But if we could establish some kind of contract with them so that if they are going out just as soon as they dump their kids at the Latino school, then they're going out to assist us wherever we're having a problem. That's the thing that I was thinking about.
But to piggyback off that same thought, I mean, this was a startup school. I don't think this school was more than 2 or 3 years old, and they opted to run their own bus company. Right, and I hear what you're saying about 5 buses. Ours is 14 buses, right? So maybe it's twice the size of the program.
Well, it's almost three times.
Three times. Right. It still might be worth the learning to at least sit down with them and see what lessons learned. You know, they had in terms of how were they able to get it up. Off the ground, because
when I was at that meeting, I thought about that.
Because the extension for us is that we could use single parents as our drivers, which would be a very highly motivated labor force. You know,
or you do a mix, right?
Or a mix thereof, right?
When I asked Mosley, I think the buses run 50 to 60 grand for the good one, right? So if you have three, you're talking 175 or something like that. Yeah. Do you do that and then mix that with other? I think
mix it with the advance. You know, if we got consistency,
then insurance is what is through the roof. Yeah. Right.
But again, I think you got to look.
Yeah,
I think when you, but you've got a place where to park the. You can park them here, right? You can lease buses. It's cheaper to lease them than to own them, and you have a place. The long range issue, guys, is the transportation costs ain't going down; it's going up. So either you're going to control your own fate, or you're going to roll the dice on what's happening at the marketplace, and the marketplace is not a good one here. So it's like you got to start thinking outside the box, because it's probably going to take us about a year to go one way or the other. So either you spend it trying to find another vendor, which is going to be a difficult task here in Delaware, or you develop your own program, which will probably take you about a year to get it up and off the ground. But at least you start to control your own fate, which is what I think is a major overwhelming factor that you have to consider. But
so maybe we charge a task force to start studying, because there are a few charters who do have their own.
Buses and you. And you're here in a community where you're adjacent to another charter school that you could partner.
It's closer. It's above those.
They said we can do that.
It's up to the charter school. Not up to anybody
else.
If you start your own bus company,
that's what I would think. I mean, it's going to be, it'll be tough to operate our own company for a school of our size. Because, you know, you need to hire the drivers, you need to pay, so we need to hire a mechanic. There's things that'll come along with it. But for a small, it's a show. You gonna get under the bus? Check that thing out.
Not the tie.
He's just running down to Jiffy Lube.
Not the kid. But those are the things we can consider. So I mean, Mr. Brown had already, prior to this conversation, had already begun to think about some different options, and so he's going to set up an initial conversation. I think that can be kind of a kick to just thinking of what are some other opportunities we can take. All right, okay. So that's not going anywhere. We'll talk about that every month. But in the interest of time, I'm going to move on to the executive committee. The one thing we had committed to do before the end of last year was to meet with Dana. You know, we were encouraged by. When we got renewed, you know, to do some strategic planning. We paid for that, you know, we paid the deposit on that. Dana Paul Stock sent us an initial survey, which we all took. We all gave our feedback. And he kind of put a session around, you know, we all described Thomas Edison in our own words, what we thought the strengths were, what we thought our weaknesses were, and now he has an interest in getting together for that training session. And it's like a 4-hour window, so we'll probably need to be a Saturday. So we'll need to think of some prospective days. I'll shoot out. I'm going to... next Wednesday for a week, I'm going to London. See the Eagles while they're in London. But it was planned before that. So I'm going to be in London for a week. But it'll probably need to be sometime in November or December, which is going to be tough just because of holidays. So I haven't been in a rush to come up with dates because it's just going to be tough to come up with some dates. But we can
talk. So what I could do is I could... maybe get 4 dates that work for us on the school side, give them to you. All
right, I'll do that.
You guys can look at those 4 dates thing. And see what might, and maybe we can come up with a date.
Yeah, okay, so let's do that. Yeah. And I'll get with Paul, I'll tell him that we're working on it. And because we really need that to kind of kick off some of the things we're talking about, and we know fundraising is going to become even more important, talking about the bus situation. So, you know, that can kind of get us on the way.
Was that one of the requirements for our condition?
No, it wasn't. So that's what ended up, that's what then, so the requirement was we all took the board Dana training. And then they said, well, we got this other great thing that we can offer you that would be good for Edison, which I initially mistook as a direction as opposed to a suggestion. Denise had clarified that for me. So it's not a condition. The condition was the initial training and the ethics. PIC training were the two conditional things. Which kind of got Paul pushed to the back burner a bit. and then the we all had to go to Dover or Smyrna or whatever for the ethics, and I just felt bad trying to, over the summer, again, come to everyone and say, I need you to do this. The next thing is, so we'll come up with those dates between Principal Allen and I, and we'll put that out to everyone. If you have any board members or any folks that you're concerned, so I've asked Principal L to recommend or speak to some parents, because we need 2 parent representatives. And all of us over the next month, anyone that has the passion for what we do, maybe has an area of expertise, doesn't have to be the next meeting. You know, send that out to the board, and we can talk through some things via email. But I would like to see a full board at the end of the year. Next month would be great because the annual meeting. But by the end of the December board meeting, we can be up and running at a full board, including parent representatives. That would be great to start the new calendar year. So just consider that over the course of the next month. The other thing I'll just share, which isn't really an agenda item, but it's just top of mind. This is my final thing. Kind of your homework. So one of the things we've done in the past that I want to continue to do is we've had measurements for the head of school and his leadership team that were intended to be quantitative and were rewarded with bonuses. I'd like to do the same thing this year. The different approach I would like to take is for us all collectively to come up with our good measurements. What are things we should judge ourselves on? So if everyone thought of at least one thing that was kind of what they thought was something that was kind of a key thing, and we can pull those together and we can choose kind of from there. We can, a lot of those are going to be things that relate to each other, so we kind of lump those together. some will be more important than others in terms of kind of a scaling, so we can talk about that. But that'll be a pool that we can kind of talk from. So between now and the next board meeting, just kind of think about that. And you don't have to be on the board or leadership. You know what the school needs, which is things that you think we should measure ourselves on. Feel free to participate as well. You know, here's something that I think is a good measurement to hold ourselves accountable. And then we can talk about what fits and what doesn't. So I'll have that as an agenda item next month. But that concludes what I have for the executive committee. I don't have a formal report, so we don't necessarily need to vote on that. Any board member comments? Any new business that we need to touch on that I didn't talk about?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Move adjournment.
Second. All right.
Motion adjourned. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. End the session.